This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLeod County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, 89.1 in DeKalb Sycamore, 89.3 in Morris Joliet, 88.9 in Rockford area, Marengo, Harvard, and Beloit, covering much of central and also now northern Illinois and growing thanks to you. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn. Remember always that we're brought to you by you, and we couldn't have this show or our programming without you. So any donations that you can make are always needed and to pay the bills. And if you would like to make a donation, I would hope you would do that today. You can go to our website. That's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. And that will tell you how to make a donation, and it will give you a lot more information about us and what we do, and maybe some information on how you might be able to fit in with our organization. We talked about True Confessions last week, a book that's put out by Francis Mayer, by Ignatius, and it gives a great picture of the present-day church and a lot of the concerns and so forth that are going on in it, and I talked about that last week. I'm going to sum up a little bit about what we did last week. We talked about John Courtney Murray and religious freedom and the conflicts of the idea of religious freedom. I won't go into a lot of that again, but the fact is that John Courtney Murray tried to rationalize Catholicism and Americanism, and the fact is that his book,
Murray's book?
Yeah, John Courtney Murray's book, We Hold These Truths. My mind just wouldn't grab that title. We Hold These Truths. Murray, in that book, We Hold These Truths, tried to rationalize Americanism and Catholicism. And the fact is that the book fails to do that. There is a difference between Catholicism and between Americanism. And the fact is there's no such thing, I've said it before, as complete religious freedom in any particular government or society. Every government, as I've said before, has to decide what the principles are upon which it will operate. Those principles at bottom are always religious, and the government's principles, of course, are regnant and have to be followed. And if religious principles contradict those, then those religious principles are overruled. For example, most of our principles were, in the beginning, Christian principles. They were taken from, actually, Catholicism in the first place, because it was the Catholic Church that built Western civilization. And those principles, for example, would exclude the practice of sati, for example, which was practiced in India, meaning that upon the death of a husband, a wife could be actually immolated on the husband's funeral pyre. And of course, we would not allow that in our country, and we wouldn't even allow that today, even though there have been a lot of inroads made on our Christian principles and our Christian civilization. That certainly wouldn't be allowed. And so a religious practice like that would be outlawed. And in any society, the rules would exclude certain religious practices. And it's the same thing here. And so the fact is that the Catholic Church considers itself a true religion. It considers the fact that Jesus Christ was God, and that he showed the Catholic Church, he actually founded the Catholic Church and commanded it to go out in the world and teach all nations. And the Catholic Church considers that it has the authority to go out and do that. And some of those dogmas and principles are now especially beginning to conflict with what's going on in the state. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more here in a minute or two, with this idea now of people on behalf of the state attacking Christianity through what they call Christian nationalism. And I'll read an article on that that appears in the National Catholic Register. And that is conflicting with the idea of some of our American principles, according to these people. And it's causing a lot of stir. And so I'll mention again, the fact is that also I addressed the fact last week that some people are saying that I'm not just talking about the Christian nationalism, But the fact is that the Catholic Church itself invented the idea of a separation between church and state. And I talked about that last week, that they're really under the idea of Catholicism, there is no such thing as a separation of church and state. That the Catholic Church has always taught that there has been a distinction between a church and state, that the state does things on one hand and the church does things on the other hand, but both are equal and be treated equally under God, and that both the state and the church are under God and under God's law, and that an unjust law, that is a law that is not based on God's law, is no law at all. And the church has always taught that, and I'll talk about that a little bit more also as well. And so we'll talk about some of those things, and we'll talk about the idea of this Christian nationalism and how it applies in our time and the upheaval that it's causing in our society. So there's always something going on, it seems like, and it seems like our society is becoming a little bit more secular and a little bit more insane. And there is that conflict between secular humanism, which seems to be the religion of the state, secular humanism, and Christianity or Catholicism, which, of course, Catholicism, as I've said, built Western civilization. And so there is a conflict between those two. And we'll get into that a little bit. Is there anything?
April 2nd through the 8th, we're going to have our spring fundraiser, and appreciate you tuning in and hearing more about John Paul II. And maybe you could all think about what you can do to help us out. You know, it's going to take $50,000 off, you know, just to keep us on the air for the rest of the year. So we're going to be asking for assistance. Keep that in mind.
And also, before I forget, I also want to make an announcement here also concerning the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois. And the announcement is that the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois has awarded 3 Peoria Diocese schools grants for the next school year, totaling $15,000. And if you want to know a little bit more about the Fire Foundation, prior to the launch of Fire, the students diagnosed with significant disabilities were rarely admitted to Catholic schools. Appropriate resources and support were simply not available, and inclusion was not yet recognized as a best practice in education. Little did these trailblazers know how the concept of inclusion would emerge as a proven and a successful approach that benefits children of all abilities. And in its 25-year existence, FIRE has now partnered with an increasing number of schools in the Kansas City St. Joseph Diocese and raised more than $5.5 million to support inclusive education and impacted the lives of thousands of Kansas City area children and families. And that's where it started. But additionally, this organization, FIRE, now has affiliate programs in Northwest Indiana, Northwest Iowa, New Hampshire, Dallas, Greater Chicago, Central Illinois, and Denver. So Central Illinois is included in this organization, and that's what they do, is they help make it possible for students with certain types of disabilities to go to parochial schools where these students were not able to do so before and had to go to public schools, and now they can go to parochial schools. So thanks very much to the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois and its awards, and for helping Catholic schools and the diocese schools here. So,
right. Corpus Christi School has gotten a grant from that grant. They've gotten some monies to help bring through the Fire Foundation. So it's helping locally, and I believe in Champaign too, that one of their schools is getting part of that.
And I wanted to make this announcement, of course, last week, but we weren't here last week. I had a little bit of some chills and so forth last week, and I wasn't sure if I wasn't coming down with something. But whatever it was, it went away and really didn't bother. So I'm glad to be back here again today. And so we were supposed to announce this last week. For those people from FIRE that were listening out there, maybe you didn't hear it last week. I don't know if it was announced or not. without our being here. But at any rate, we're doing it now. And if you're listening out there, you can be proud of yourselves for helping to make this possible.
Right.
At any rate, there is always something, it seems like, in our modern society, in our society that seems to be going insane and becoming more and more secular human and human, based more on secularism and humanism. And there has been, as we pointed out, in the last several years especially, an attack on Christianity in general by secular forces, and also an attack on Catholicism in particular by those same forces. And now there's this idea of what they call Christian nationalism, which is supposed to be some sort of fascism, and that this is something. So I'm going to read an article here from the National Catholic Register about Christian nationalism, just a little bit of that article, and talk about it somewhat, and we'll come back to it in a little bit. But at any rate, it's important, I think, an important topic to talk about. You're going to hear more about it, and these accusations are being hurled at people who have faith, who bring their faith into the public square, and especially if it conflicts with some of the things that the secular government wants to do. And so there's this idea of Christian nationalism, and it's being used against people of faith. And so I'll read from this article so you'll have an idea out there what it is. And we'll talk about why the fact is that a lot of this is happening because there has always been a conflict in this country between the church and the state, and they're really not reconcilable. And we have to decide whether or not we still are a nation that bases most of our principles upon Christianity, which were sort of taken for granted when this nation was founded, and now are coming into conflict with a lot of the ideas of a so-called separation between church and state. And really, the Catholic Church does not really recognize. There are people that think that somehow or another the Catholic Church recognizes. It never has. And I read from some of the popes last week to point that out. Maybe I'll read from that again a little bit if we have time. It goes on here in this article. It says, "Do you believe that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? If so, prepare to be labeled a Christian nationalist." Now, that might throw you, because you might assume that the Declaration of Independence itself invokes those rights based on our creation by a Creator, and certainly it does. But nevertheless, Christian people being accused of Christian nationalism are told that because they believe these things, that makes them a Christian nationalist, and they're in conflict with our state. It goes, "At least that was a takeaway of a recent essay in Politico, which equated holding views shared by the American founders with being part of a marginal movement of evangelical Protestants intent on opposing elements of theocratic rule on the United States. Prominent Catholics sharply criticized the article, and one of its authors' subsequent TV appearance for implying that believing in God-given rights or appealing to the natural law in policy debates makes one a Christian nationalist. Saying that our rights and dignity and sanctity come from God isn't spooky Christian nationalism," wrote Ryan Anderson, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, a conservative Washington think tank. "And it would be odd, indeed unjust, to say that all non-religious worldviews have a seat at the table while religious ones don't. But that seems to be exactly what a lot of secularists in government are saying, is that somehow or another religion is to be excluded from the public square because there is this separation of church and state. And that's why I'm saying it's so important. And that's why we talked about it last week, the idea that the Catholic Church has never taught that there is a separation between church and state. It has always taught from Pope Calasius in the 5th century, who said, 'Two there are,' meaning the church and the state, and both are under God. And the Catholic Church has always taught that. In fact, Pope Calasius in the 5th century said that actually the church is a little bit weightier of the two. That, in other words, the church should have more influence of the two than the state itself does the church should set the moral direction and the ethical direction for society, and the state should take care of the civic things. It goes on here, it says, In fact, the political piece is part of a larger mainstream media narrative that Christian nationalism will be injected into American law and government if Donald Trump is elected to a second term in the Oval Office. And of course, here, this is, as you might suspect, something that is being used against Trump. And of course, the fact is that Christian principles have been injected into our law for a long, long time. And if there is a separation of church and state, then that conflict is becoming a conflict that is growing, and it needs to be addressed. If they are empowered by this November's election, they will force every American to live under Christo-fascist governance and laws drawn from their narrow interpretation of the Bible, wrote Andrew Watkins in one instance of this kind of argument. Democracy will be replaced with theocracy. Well, I think this is an exaggeration, but nevertheless, it illustrates the fact that there has always been a conflict between the so-called secular government of our country and Christianity itself, and especially Catholic Christianity. We're going to have to stop here and take a break, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
If you have some extra time, put those hours to use for the Lord. With Catholic Spirit Radio's growing radio network, we have 3 new behind-the-scenes volunteer positions. If you're interested, call the station. 309-807-2427.
Volunteers are specifically needed for each of these roles. First, an energetic and experienced event manager is needed to coordinate our spring and fall on-air fundraisers.
Give us a call if that's you.
Second, Catholic Spirit Radio needs 1 to 2 hours every 2 or 3 weeks from a volunteer or a team of 2 for lightweight general cleaning at our normal location.
Give us a call if you and a friend are interested.
And third, we are in need of 1 to 2 spirit liaisons from each of these areas: Rockford, Harvard, Morris, DeKalb, Sycamore, Lincoln, Pontiac, and Clinton. These individuals will assist with informational tables at your local events.
Give us a call if you can help out.
Become part of our radio mission in 2024.
Volunteer at Catholic Spirit Radio.
309-807-2427.
Catholic Spirit Radio has posted a special list of Mass times for more than 80 local churches that fulfill the one Easter obligation to attend either Holy Saturday evening or Easter morning.
Our list also includes the 2 optional Thursday's Last Supper Mass and Good Friday services.
Lent is a great time to consult our community calendar of parish and organization events and our year-round webpage with weekly confession times, including Lent reconciliation services.
Go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
We are the Easter people. That joyful quote from Pope St. John Paul II is truly beautiful. Catholic Spirit Radio has plans to broadcast more quotes, facts, and personal stories about this holy and beloved man. Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN Radio, and I will again be the host of Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon from April 2nd through the 5th. Our focus this year is St. John Paul II, so you won't want to miss a single day of our special programming. We'll have plenty of other things to keep you entertained as well, including local and national guests, a gift for every donor, and daily drawings. Pope John Paul II reminds us that each of us are called to evangelize, and when you make a donation during the Carathon, you are helping to pay bills, update equipment, and create resources which share the good news of our faith. The Catholic Spirit Radio Network does good work for you. They are a nonprofit and definitely need your financial and prayerful help to continue broadcasting throughout Central and Northern Illinois. Spend time with us for Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon and show that you care on April 2nd through the 5th.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Radio. We're back from our break. We're talking about Christian nationalism, an article that is appearing in the National Catholic Register. And it's concerned a term that is being used by secular people concerning the government, saying that Christians pose a danger to the government itself because they are injecting Christian principles into government, and that should not be. And there are some various spokesmen for the Catholic Church, especially, that are commenting on this issue. And a lot of experts in government and law are commenting on this. And they go on and say the greater danger, these experts warn, isn't of an impending Christian nationalist takeover, but that the term is being used to discredit Christian participation in the public square. particularly when it comes to advocating for positions that run afoul of liberal priorities. The media is just reflecting the attempt by progressives to silence faithful Catholics and other Christians on the non-negotiable issues of the sanctity of life from conception until natural death and marriage between one man and one woman, said Ann Hendershot, director of the Veritas Center for Ethics and Public Life at Franciscan University of Steubenville. She noted that protecting the unborn and marriages as between a man and a woman isn't just consistent with Catholic teaching, but also with the natural law. But of course, a lot of these people, secularists, would deny the whole idea of natural law as well. And we've talked about natural law on this program before. And it says, it goes on, it says, it's feeding into a divisiveness that's come to mark American society and politics. And that's what I have been talking about recently, and I've been talking about it off and on for a long time. There always has been a divisiveness in American society, right from the very beginning of our country, as to this idea of church and state and this idea of separation of church and state. And the fact is, as I pointed out last week, the idea of separation in church and state is not a Catholic idea. In the Catholic Church has always taught that there's a distinction between the church and state, but not a separation between the church and state. And I pointed out last week on this program that it is silly to think that somehow we as individual people have an obligation to God and owe duty and obligation to the teachings, especially to the teachings of the Catholic Church, as private individual citizens, but somehow or another, as members of the state, we don't have any duty to God, and that somehow we're separated from our duties to God, and those are left within the walls of the church. This simply has not been possible, and so this particular type of division has been coming on for a long time, and it's getting worse and worse as our society becomes less and less Christian and more secular. It goes on, it says, Americans have to engage in tough conversations without devolving into calling people Christian nationalists or maligning them with labels instead of engaging them with ideas. The political piece entitled Trump Allies Prepare to Infuse Christian Nationalism in Second Administration serves as a case study of these concerns. In the article, the belief that freedom is defined by God, not man, is presented as the defining mark of Christian nationalism, along with the view America was founded as a Christian nation and that Christian values should be prioritized throughout government and public life. The fact is America, you know, was really not founded as a Christian nation, but the fact is that Western civilization itself was certainly founded as a Christian civilization. It was founded by the Catholic Church, and it's a functional society that founded by the Catholic Church. And so these beliefs have seeped into our government and were taken for granted from the very beginning, but somehow we are supposed to have a separation of church and state. And according, of course, to common sense in the Catholic Church, there really can't be a separation of church and state. As I pointed out, every society has to have the various principles upon which its laws will be based. It has to have, every society has laws, and every society has principles upon which those laws were based. And all principles at bottom are always religious. Even the so-called secular humanistic principles are really religious principles. Secular humanism is a religion in and of itself, a very dysfunctional religion, and materialism is also a dysfunctional philosophy and a dysfunctional idea. It really can't possibly explain the world, the human mind, or almost anything else. And science, for example, simply cannot function under materialistic thinking, materialistic philosophy. And we'll go into that in just a little bit also. It goes on here. It says the authors of this Christian nationalist idea, Heidi Prisbola and Alexander Ward, even factored belief in the natural law, a framework for determining what it's best for persons by appealing to human nature that was developed by the likes of the non-Christian philosopher Aristotle into their assessment of Christian nationalism. In other words, if you believe in natural law, then somehow or another, that also makes you a Christian naturalist. In other words, according to these people, our laws, rights don't come from God. Our rights come from the state. And so if you teach that you're and believe that your rights come from God and not from the state, as the Catholic Church certainly teaches, then you are, according to these people, a Christian nationalist. It goes on. It says, while Pope Francis has recently highlighted the natural law as an important framework for pluralistic societies, given its accessibility to all people, because the natural law is based actually on Aristotle's idea of it, and that was separate from any particular religion. It goes on, it says, the political piece described it as a sectarian belief, a core pillar of Catholicism that is used to restrict abortion and sexual liberties. And Presbyla further fanned the flames in a subsequent MSNBC appearance, stating that what unites Christian nationalists is that they believe that our rights as Americans and as all human beings do not come from any earthly authority. They don't come from Congress, from the Supreme Court. They come from God. And of course, the Catholic Church has always taught that our rights come from God. As I pointed out, Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail incorporated the idea of natural rights, and it incorporated the Catholic idea laid down by St. Augustine himself when St. Augustine said, any law that does not conform to God's law is no law at all and does not have to be obeyed. And that's exactly what Martin Luther King wrote. And of course, these very people back at that time were all in favor of Christian nationalism when it goes along in the direction that they are going and supports the things that they want to support. But of course, when it doesn't do that, then somehow it's Christian nationalism and it's against the law. So according to them, your rights out there come not from God, but come from the state itself. It comes from Congress and it comes from the Supreme Court. So if the Supreme Court gives you a right, you have that right. And if the Supreme Court takes it away, then you don't have the right. So in other words, our laws are simply positive laws laid down by men. That is the thinking of secular humanists. And it has been the thinking for a long, long time. And it actually has crept in to our courts and our authorities back as early as the 1920s. And I've mentioned this before. Bishop Robert Barron, founder of the Catholic media apostolate We're on Fire, described Prisbola's broad critique as one of the most disturbing and frankly dangerous things I've ever seen in a political conversation. The basic problem is that if rights come from the government or Congress or the Supreme Court, they can be taken away by these same people. That is true. This is opening the door to totalitarianism, and that also is true. And the fact is that secular societies are inherently and almost naturally totalitarian, and that is the direction I've said that we have been moving in and that we are moving in closer and closer and further today. It goes on. It says, let me look here and see. Generally speaking, this is part of a continuing attack on Christians being involved in politics at all or bringing any sort of Christian standpoint to bear, Deville told the Register. Well, the point is that if there really is such a thing as separation in church and state, that is, if the church can really be separated from the state, and if Christianity or the religion of the people can really be separated from the state itself, then somehow or another, this is continuing attack on Christians being involved in politics. In other words, if you're religious, you are not supposed to be involved in politics, according to the secularists. And this is one of the problems we have had and are having in our society with this whole idea, which in my opinion is totally silly, that there is a separation of church and state. Like I said, all principles at bottom are religious, and every society has to decide which the principles are that their laws will be based on. And so what our principles are have to be decided, and we have to decide if those principles will be secular or if those principles will be Christian. They will always be religious because secular humanism is a religion in and of itself, although a dysfunctional one. It was Christianity that built Western civilization. It was Christianity that laid down the rules for science. It is Christianity that laid down the rules for our law and lay down the rules for a rational basis of living among people in all of Western civilization and Christendom. It certainly wasn't secular humanism or materialism, and I'll read a little bit about those that are impossible to actually build any kind of society like we have today, built by the Catholic Church and as Christendom and as the greater Western civilization. It goes on, it says, but the most widespread use of Christian nationalism, any kind of Christian politics that liberals find disagreeable or distasteful. Basically, that is the truth.
Yeah.
In other words, if they don't like your politics, somehow or another, it's Christian nationalism. In Patterson's assessment of political peace, attributed the most extreme definition of Christian nationalism to general Christian advocacy in the public square. In other words, if you bring your principles into the public square, then somehow or another you are a Christian nationalist, and somehow or another you are somehow a Christo-fascist, and somehow or another you are promoting fascism in the United States. But if you want to take a look at our society and see which people behave more like fascists than anybody else, it has to be very hands down the secular humanistic people out in the streets constantly protesting, destroying things, burning things down, and calling for all kinds of radical plans to overthrow the civilization that we have. Do you want to comment any more on this?
It's kind of fearful, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I said today that we need to build a resistance to all of this. And I want to read something here. This is a book, and I've had it before here. It's by Edward Fazer. It's called The Last Superstition. It's a refutation of the new atheist, but basically it's refuting secular humanism. And it has a comment on it. And I can't get into the whole thing. I've read from this book before. The fact is that materialism and the whole idea of secularism and secular humanism is one huge superstition, and it's the last great superstition of our time, and it's the modern heresy that the Catholic Church has condemned, the heresy of relativism, for example, that the Catholic Church has condemned for, over the last 100 or 150 years, modernism. At any rate, he's got something to say about it, entitled here, The New Atheism. He goes, this episode, that is the idea of Christian nationalism and others, illustrates in several respects the main themes of this book in their condescending assumption that belief in God could only be the product of wishful thinking, stupidity, ignorance, or intellectual dishonesty, in their corresponding refusal seriously to consider the possibility that that belief might be true, and the arguments for it sound, and in their glib supposition that the only rational considerations relevant to the question are, quote, scientific ones rather than philosophical, all of these attitudes manifest the quintessential mindset of modern secularism, that is, secular humanism. And insofar as it's self-satisfied, a priori, that is, before anything else, the dismissal of outsiders as benighted and of defectors as wicked or mad, insulates it, that is, secular humanism, insulates it from ever having to deal with serious criticism. It, secular humanism, is a mindset that echoes the closed-minded prejudice and irrationality it typically attributes to religious believers themselves. Secularism is, in its way, a religion to itself, and it is a religion that cannot tolerate infidels or heretics. We shall see by the end of this book, this is by no means an accident, a mere byproduct of the passion and folly to which every human being succumbs from time to time. For secularism is necessarily and inherently a deeply irrational and immoral view of the world, and the more thoroughly it is assimilated by its adherents, the more thoroughly do they cut themselves off from the very possibility of rational and moral understanding. Moreover, and for this very reason, its adherents unavoidably find it difficult, indeed almost impossible, to perceive their true condition. The less they know, the less they know it. In other words, they don't realize how stupid and how actually uneducated and ignorant that they really are. And so this is, and Edward Fazer goes on in The Last Superstition to make the case that secular humanism and materialism are simply beliefs that lead to nowhere and can't even support the basic science that they think that it does support. So this is, and that on the other hand, Christianity and religion, especially Aristotelian philosophy and religion based on it, makes sense of the entire world and can build a civilization that is functional like Western civilization that the secular humanists do not appreciate, do not understand, and wouldn't have a prayer of building. And basically, what secular humanism does is destroy everything that it touches and bring down societies like that. And you see it in the chaos going on around us. We'll have to stop here and take a break, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
If you have some extra time, put those hours to use for the Lord. With Catholic Spirit Radio's growing radio network, we have three new behind-the-scenes volunteer positions. If you're interested, call the station, 309-807-2427.
Volunteers are specifically needed for each of these roles. First, an energetic and experienced event manager is needed to coordinate our spring and fall on-air fundraisers.
Give us a call if that's you.
Second, Catholic Spirit Radio needs 1 to 2 hours every 2 or 3 weeks from a volunteer or a team of two for lightweight general cleaning at our normal location.
Give us a call if you and a friend are interested.
And third, we are in need of 1 to 2 spirit liaisons from each of these areas, Rockford, Harvard, Morris, DeKalb, Sycamore, Lincoln, Pontiac, and Clinton. These individuals will assist with informational tables at your local events.
Give us a call if you can help out.
Become part of our radio mission in 2024.
Volunteer at Catholic Spirit Radio,
309-807-2427.
Catholic Spirit Radio has posted a special list of Mass times for more than 80 local churches that fulfill the one Easter obligation to attend either Holy Saturday evening or Easter morning.
Our list also includes the two optional Thursday's Last Supper Mass and Good Friday services.
Lent is a great time to consult our community calendar of parish and organization events and our year-round webpage with weekly confession times, including Lent reconciliation services.
Go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
We are the Easter people. That joyful quote from Pope St. John Paul II is truly beautiful. Catholic Spirit Radio has plans to broadcast more quotes, facts, and personal stories about this holy and beloved man. Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN Radio, and I will again be the host of Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon from April 2nd through the 5th. Our focus this year is St. John Paul II, so you won't want to miss a single day of our special programming. We'll have plenty of other things to keep you entertained as well, including local and national guests, a gift for every donor, and daily drawings. Pope John Paul II reminds us that each of us are called to evangelize, and when you make a donation during the Carathon, you are helping to pay bills, update equipment, and create resources which share the good news of our faith. The Catholic Spirit Radio Network does good work for you. They are a nonprofit and definitely need your financial and prayerful help to continue broadcasting throughout Central and Northern Illinois. Spend time with us for Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon and show that you care on April 2nd through the 5th.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic. We're back from our break. We were talking about this new charge that's being made by secular humanists, secularists, if you want to call them that, of Christian nationalism, meaning that if you believe that your rights come from God and not from the Supreme Court, nor the state legislature, nor Congress, that your rights are above and beyond that, that somehow or another you are a Christian nationalist and that you are in contradiction to the laws of this country and that somehow you should be stifled and stopped from participating in the public square and in politics. And I've said before that we should begin as Christians and as Catholics especially building a resistance to this totalitarian mindset that is going on in our society right now and to all the chaos that's going on around us and especially to the cancel culture that cancels people, isolates them, and ostracizes them from everybody else. And so I think that in order to do this, we need to understand exactly what it is like from the point of view of some of people who have been ostracized, especially in the academy, especially in our educational system. And so I'm going to read here from a man who has written a letter to the magazine, the New Oxford Review here, and it's from the March 2024 issue of the New Oxford Review. And he is a professor in a university, and this person wrote some historical information about what happened in to some of the Japanese during World War II. And because what he wrote was in disagreement with what the secular humanistic people in the university think and believe, this man was ostracized, and he's talking and canceled, and he's talking about what it's like. And he wrote something about Japanese history that they disagreed with, and because they disagreed with it, they considered him some kind of a bigot and this is someone that shouldn't be teaching at the university. He goes on and he says, in reply to this, he says, "But this is not what 21st century university professors of Japanese history allow. I was a racist." They're calling him a racist and a denialist because of what he wrote about what happened in Japan during World War II, and he was writing from factual history, he says, "and a fraud," they announced, "and they orchestrated a full-scale professional ostracism. You might wonder what racism and denialism have to do with 1940s Japanese history. I wondered that too, but to the attackers, the accusations justified the ostracism. Giving space and legitimacy to racists, historical deniers, and scholarships without merit through debate does harm to the academic community and the broader public by amplifying dangerous positions and or untruths," announced one of my most hostile critics. "By calling someone a racist, denialist, or fraud, they could, in their minds, validly deny him a chance to defend himself. When I posted a long and detailed response to my critics on the Harvard Law School Working Paper series, one of the critics even tried to intimidate the professor handling the series into taking down my response. Fortunately for me, my colleague refused. During an ostracism, nights are long. Actually, the days can be long too, but the nights are especially bad. Ostracism haunts. It is lonely and it is brutal. To be sure, ostracism also teaches. Ostracism is about sorrow, and sorrow marries us again to God. I was raised by ministers, but had largely forgotten how to pray. Ostracized, I taught myself anew. In being ostracized within the university community, I am hardly alone. We are, each of us, always a moment away from being spotlighted and dehumanized," writes one of the professors. "Cancelings today are a dime a dozen. We on the faculty need to reflect on how this came to be. Even those of us not on the far left need to reflect. Indeed, those of us not on the far left especially need to reflect because we are the ones who let this happen. The cancelings, the punishments, the DEI bureaucracy, the endless list that we could all recite, all this happened on our watch. We saw it happen, but did nothing. And I want to interject here and talk about you're seeing it happening now again with this idea of Christian nationalism and Christians being attacked for actually wanting to speak up in the public square and for actually believing that our rights don't come from a bunch of politicians in Congress. And this guy goes on, he says, "We saw it happen, but we did nothing. We were too busy. We were scared to speak up. We on the faculty, let our universities become what they are. The universities that we have are the result of our own collective moral failure. It is high time for us to take a stand. The place where you make your stand never mattered," wrote Stephen King. Yes, that's Stephen King. "Only that you were there and still on your feet. We need to do it now." So he is saying that because professors in universities and students and so forth in universities let this happen without saying anything, kept their heads down, didn't want to stand out. Because of this, we have what we have going on now. And if we allow this to happen, this idea of driving Christians out of the public square because they believe in principles that are actually more rational, more enlightened, and more prone to building decent civilizations than the secular humanists, then somehow or another, if we allow ourselves to be driven out of the public square and don't stand up for the fact that the public square needs religious principles, and we'll have some type of religious principles no matter what. If we don't stand up and we let this happen, then the same thing will happen in our society, the same totalitarianism that has happened on our campuses. So we need to do that. It goes here near the end of this of his column. Jason Morgan concludes, "I have come to believe that what I have seen in my lifetime, this crazed disunity of the exalted and the despised, is not political, not economic, not social, not cultural, and not even human in many ways. It is diabolical. The current reality is that the devil is on a roll, deeply entrenched in the primary culture carriers of the West. Our ancient enemy has steamrolled through our fragile defenses, gaining momentum as he goes. And his Christian nationalism idea is part of that diabolical move of the devil in our society. Not many people would agree with this. Not many people today are aware of the intensity of the spiritual warfare in which we are engaged. When 69% of Catholics do not believe in transubstantiation, that the Eucharist is truly the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus, calling it only a symbol, it is no wonder there is faint awareness or even belief in Satan and his hatred of mankind. Historically, the most formidable defense against the evil one has been the Catholic Church. However, the Church has grown weak, her authority undermined or compromised. In response to this, Pope Benedict XVI said, "The Church is there so that God, the living God, may be made known, so that man may learn to live with God, live in his sight, and in fellowship with him. The Church is there to prevent the advance of hell upon earth and to make earth fit to live in through the light of God." How can the Church prevent the advance of hell if she cannot present a powerful united front, cannot be a bulwark to block and repel insistent diabolical assaults on all aspects of human life? Scripture says, "Without a vision, the people perish." Given that Satan is well established in our consumer culture, in domestic and international politics, and in most forms of entertainment, a clear vision, a new way forward, is required. Benedict proposed just that. He said, "Since a consumer culture exists that wants to prevent us from living in accordance with the Creator's plan, we must have the courage to create islands, oases, and then great stretches of land of Catholic culture where the Creator's design is lived out." And he said this in an encounter with the youth in April of 2006. These are not whimsical musings of an ancient pope. We need to be in the world, but not of it. And we need to understand that we have to oppose this type of persecution. So I have been talking here about starting a resistance movement. And I think for people out there, younger people especially, that this is what we need to do. There needs to be a Catholic resistant movement and an apostolate, and I think someone out there should start it, to give support to people who are canceled, just like this professor said he was canceled because he wrote something about Japanese history that the secular humanists on the campuses disagreed with, and so they ostracized this man and made his life a living hell simply because he disagreed with their particular position, and it then was silenced and stifled. We see it where universities stop people like Kyle Rittenberg from speaking on campus. We see it when Christian speakers and so forth are stopped from speaking on campuses. We see it in its charge of Christian nationalism against people who want to bring their religious principles into the public square. And we have to understand that it is not Christianity and it is not religion. It is not the whole concept, the Aristotelian concept of the universe, the religious, in effect, concept of the universe that is dysfunctional. It is the secular humanist, materialistic idea of society and of a world that is dysfunctional, and it creates over and over again the totalitarian societies that destroy civilization and destroy people and that are not capable of supporting science or any other positive forces. So this is what we need to do. We need to build a resistance. And for people out there, if you are prone along these lines to want to do something like this, go ahead and start now and build an apostolate of resistance. Build on the idea of providing sustenance and providing friendship and providing support for people who are canceled either on campuses or in business or just in general society because what they say goes against the trend of the secular humanism that is taking over and destroying our Western civilization. And quit buying into this idea that there is a separation of church and state. There is no such thing as a separation of church and state. There never was, there isn't now, and there never will be. And there's no such thing as total religious freedom. There wasn't before, there isn't now, and there never will be. All societies have to decide what their legal principles will be, what their laws will be based on, and those principles are always religious principles. Secular humanist principles are just as religious as anybody else's principles, except that secular humanism is, as Edward Fazer says in his book, The Last Superstition, secular humanist principles are simply dysfunctional, not workable, and totally irrational. They are irrational. They will not support any kind of civilization or any kind of decent culture. And if you read that book, The Last Superstition by Edward Fazer, you will understand why. And you will understand why it was Christian principles and Christianity that built Western civilization, laid the foundations for science, mathematics, universities, and all of the civilization that you see around you. And it is secular humanism and its dysfunctional religion that will bring those things to a halt. And so we do need a resistance movement, a Catholic resistance movement. Be prepared if you start one to be called names. Be prepared to be smeared. Be prepared to be called a Christian nationalist. Be prepared to be constantly watching for people trying to infiltrate your organization and bring you down. So, but it is a challenge and it is something that is needed. And I wanted to talk about it. And I hope somebody out there will start something like that. You can start it on a computer basis, but actually, on an internet basis, I would say, but actually you need to start something like that on a face-to-face, human-to-human basis, because people need each other. They need real contact for that kind of support. And you need to see the people that you are dealing with and work together face-to-face in order to be effective. And so this is what I would say for somebody out there. There certainly is a need for such an apostolate. And if you have the desire to start one, then go ahead and start one. If you want to, you can contact our station here. CatholicSpiritRadio.com is our website. Go on that website, learn more about us, and contact us if you wish. So is there anything further that you would like to add to that, Lynn?
Now it's time to stand up and speak the truth. Be aware of what's going on around you. We're all in danger.
I would agree. I would say so. And we are.
Spiritually, but we're in real danger. And we should join Cardinal Burke in his 9-month novena to Our Lady of Guadalupe. He's praying for not only peace, but to bring people to come back to Christ and to Christianity. Should all join him in that. You can find it on your phones. There's a prayer he's asking us to all say every month, and he gives a little bit of insight into things each month. So join him if you will.
And again, before we end here, I want to mention again The Last Superstition by Edward Feser. That's F-E-S-E-R, Edward Feser, if you can get that book. And also Liberty, the God That Failed by Christopher A. Ferrara. Liberty, the God That Failed by Christopher A. Ferrara is a great book also to get. You'll learn so much about the fact that there, like I say, there's no such thing as a separation of church and state. There's no such thing as complete religious liberty. There never was. And all societies have to decide the religious principles upon which they'll be based, because all principles at bottom are always religious. So when, and whether those principles are functional or dysfunctional. At any rate, St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly hills, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan, all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio.